Some of us have drive, and some of us are beyond driven. Welcome to Beyond Driven Radio, bodybuilding's first stand. What's up, everybody? Welcome to Beyond Driven Radio. I am your host, David Johnson, and with me is my semi-silent partner in crime, Scott McNally. How you doing, Scott?
Hey, DJ. How you been, man?
I'm doing good, other than this early morning. Well, I shouldn't say early morning, but it's 10 a.m. For me, that's early morning. I had to make sure to get up and actually get some caffeine in and read through my questions and whatnot to make sure my brain was firing this early. But other than that, you know, ready to rock and excited. And it's nice. Somehow it's still sunny and warm out in December, so I can't really complain.
I'm excited, man, because, you know, this is my wheelhouse, I told you. You know, you like to podcast in the middle of the night. Me, personally, this is my wheelhouse. I'm an AM guy, so I'm probably still going to kind of keep in the background here, not say too much, and just keep things on track. But I'm wide awake and alert and pumped for this one especially.
Absolutely. And we want to give listeners just a quick warning. Literally 20 minutes before we started recording, this leaf-blowing crew showed up at my neighbor's house, and they're cleaning out the whole front yard, and they promise they'll try to be quiet, but if you hear a little bit of background noise, it sounds like, you know, buzz saws coming at me. It's just the neighbors. We'll try to minimize that for you. But most importantly, I think Scott and I are both really excited for today's guest. We have with us IFBB Pro. A few of you might have heard of him in the past, Mr. Evan Santapani. Evan, how you doing?
Hey, what's up, guys? It's great to be here. Thank you very much for having me.
Hey, thanks for coming on, man. So I, you know, there was a thread on muscular development a couple weeks back and people going back and forth, and you jumped in there because you have a keen eye to know when to drop some humor or some truth bombs. And I asked if you'd want to come on and talk about some topics. You agreed to come on. Overall today, what I'm just kind of talking about is the direction bodybuilding's gone in the 20th century and some of the underlying reasons, you know, possibly behind that. I think a lot of our listeners probably saw you did an interview with Louis Marco. What was that, back in about March, April, I believe?
Yeah, back early summer, somewhere around there, yeah.
Okay. And, you know, in that, he was asking some pretty interesting stuff just about, you know, modern-day masculinity and how that's kind of changed in this last, you know, 20, 30 years and what impact that might be having. All that stuff is really the stuff that interests me, you know, with my background in philosophy and, you know, burning interest in bodybuilding. So I figured you'd be the ideal candidate to come on, talk about some of those topics. Now, a lot of our listeners, you know, have heard some of your story before when we had you on Geared Up back in the day and got on Louis Marco. About your upbringing, you know, how your father had a really big influence on you. I'd like to hear, what specifically would you say are the values that you were taught? What was your father really trying to reinforce, given that you have a pretty conscious grasp of what sounds like what's right and wrong, or what you consider, you know, doing the right thing?
Right. You know, there's kind of two, I guess, maybe impressions, if you will, that I have of my father. Now, there's, you know, I grew up with my father, and now my parents were divorced when I was young, right? And they both remarried. So I have a half brother and half sister. Okay. From my father and my stepmother. And, you know, so I where there's about 10 or 12 year difference between myself and my brother. So I kind of got, there's the impression of my father from when I grew up. And then I kind of got to see him, you know, and raise my brother, as, you know, being a little bit older and able to actually watch that. And I think, you know, for my father, you know, raising a couple sons, one of the things that I think he worried most about is the fact that, you know, this world, you know, the world can be tough. The world could be, you know, I don't want to sound cheesy, but the world can be cruel. Right. And for a guy, you know, you have to be tough. You should be tough. You got to be able to stand on your own two feet. You've got to be self-reliant. And, you know, I think that's what he was most concerned about, raising two boys who, you know, weren't going to be easily taken advantage of or fooled, or, you know, that basically knew when something was bullshit or when it wasn't. So there was a lot of that. And, you know, growing up, I got to watch my father. I feel very fortunate because I was around my father a lot. And I think a lot of kids aren't. You know, I was always with my father doing something. Yeah. And it didn't have to be anything. You know, he was great in that. You know, he always tried to spend time with me to do, you know, quote, special things. Like he would take me to go, you know, to the park, or we would go here, little day trips, things like that. But there was also a lot of stuff where it was just like, you know, we're going over to grandma's, we got to fix her sink, or, you know, we got to help Uncle John paint the house, or, you know, we're going to do this. There was a lot of just day-to-day activities. And I give my dad a lot of credit, because when you're older and you've got a kid, it's much easier to just say, here, go with mom, you know, cause right. you know, we're in the way, you know, sure. and it takes a lot of patience to watch a kid, you know, stand there and watch a kid attempt something and fuck up. And, you know, you could just do it faster and better yourself. Right. So my father let me be with him a lot and take a crack at things and fuck up and get good at them. And he also, you know, he wasn't afraid to tell me when it wasn't up to snuff. You know, you did this, this is a shitty job, do this over.
Right.
You know, or, you know, look at me sideways and go, you did this, this, you know, this looks like shit. And that was all good. You know, that helped me a lot. You know, later on in life, I realized how many things I'm able to do in the name, you know, of being self-sufficient and independent, where, you know, a lot of kids I grew up with, I feel like sometimes they don't know anything about anything. And I think a lot of it was just me spending time with my father.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like he was really aimed at, you know, not just spending time with you, but time that had some productive function, meaning, you know, he's going to find a way to make it fun for you to actually go out there and like work. You know, he'd somehow, oh, we're going to go fix the sink, or we're going to go change a tire. You know, ways that got you interacting with the world that actually made you, you know, learn how to work in the world and get out there and do shit. And I know that Dorian, you know, Dorian is a real big influence on you as well, correct? At least in terms of...
Absolutely. You know, he's a man.
Right. Well, and with that, you know, I think one of the key things that sounds like that you're aiming at here is kind of the importance of action over words. Not to say that, you know, what you say isn't important, but how do you back that up? You know, everyone nowadays talks real big game on social media, on the internet. Everyone is an expert in everything, as you know. You know, it kind of doesn't mean crap if you can't walk the walk to go along with it. Would you say that's pretty accurate of where you stand, you know, from a value standpoint?
Yeah, you know, and again, bringing it back to my father, he, you know, a lot of times I think you have parents and they sit their kids down and they tell them, you can be anything. But then they watch their parents get abused day to day, you know, whether it's by their boss, you know, they get shit on, or the parents, they shit on each other. They take a lot of crap. I never saw my father take any crap growing up. So he never had to really sit me down and give me pep talks or inspirational, you know, feed me inspirational stuff.
Yeah.
I was able to watch him as somebody who had a lot of fortitude. He could persevere, and, you know, he would sooner, you know, burn the house down than let you take it, type of thing.
So you're essentially, what you're talking about there is integrity, you know, like he was
integrity. Just, you know, he didn't have to talk about it. He did it. I saw him do it. I saw him be it.
Right. Well, and I think that's, you know, the concept of integrity is very much lost these days, and we'll get into that a little bit more. But one thing that I really want to get on here is, you know, you were talking about your father kind of taught you to be a man, so to speak. And that statement itself, by many, would be considered controversial these days. You know, oh, what do you mean taught you to be a man? Like, there's something inherently good about that. In your opinion, and of course, you know, I don't think anybody expects a hard and true definition, but in your mind, what does it mean to be masculine, or what is masculinity as opposed to, you know, traditional femininity that your father was trying to convey to you, and why is it important?
You know, it's funny, you know, like you said, we're living in a funny time right now where, like you said, if you said be a man, people look at you funny. What's that supposed to mean? Sure. You know, I think inherently men, women, they're born with certain strong points, and it's okay to, you know, to practice those or to celebrate those. And it doesn't have to be that I'm able to do everything my wife does, or, right. you know what I mean? I don't have to try to match her. She doesn't have to try to match me. Like, everybody has things they're good at, and they've got some things that they're not so good at. And, you know, if you want to try to get better at the things you're bad at, that's cool. But there's nothing wrong with embracing who you are and what you're good at. And that's, it's kind of ironic in that we're living in a time where everyone's telling you to embrace yourself. But if people are afraid to be proud of what they're good at or what it is they do, or, you know, it might be offensive. So to be a man, you know, look, you have to be able to stand on your own two feet. And I think there's a certain, look, tradition, it doesn't always make sense just to try to buck tradition just for the sake of bucking it. Hmm. You know what I mean? It's not progressive to turn something upside down just for the sake of doing that. There's sure. some things that have been in place for a long time, and a lot of times there's a reason for it. Now, from my perspective, and I'm not trying to cram this down anyone's throat, this is just how I feel about things and how I run my house and how things are in my life, right? I've got two daughters. My wife, you know, she wants to be home with our children, right? She doesn't want to put them in daycare, to go out and, you know, it was more important to her to raise our children than to go out into the world and, you know, have a high profile career or to make a ton of money. And that happens to jive well with me. So what I'm getting at is it's important to me to be able to support my family, because if she's going to be home doing that, then it's up to me to be able to provide for that. Sure. If it's the other way around in certain relationships, great. If the woman is has a high profile career and she makes a lot of money and it makes more sense for the man to stay home, cool. That doesn't bother me, but I think somebody should be home raising children, because I don't understand the point of having kids just to have somebody else raise them.
No, I agree 100%.
So for me, it was, I knew it was, that's how it was going to be. I was going to be the person responsible for providing. So there was just, to be a man, it was, look, you got to be independent. You got to stand on your own two feet. You got to rule the house, and in the sense of, it's your responsibility. If something needs to be fixed, that's my domain. If it's up to me to take care of it.
Right. I mean, at the end of the day, if something doesn't get done by somebody else, you're going to be the bottom line. You're going to be the last stop, so to speak, to make sure what needs to get done gets done, whether you feel like it or not. Yes.
Yes. And if I need to contract somebody to come over to fix something, it's up to me to know what I'm talking about so that I don't get taken for a ride. You know what I mean? I have to know enough about, whether it's some masonry that has to get done or some painting that needs to be done. I need to not be fooled. That's my domain.
Sure. So then, out of curiosity, given that you have two young daughters and I have a pretty young daughter myself, how are you going to convey? I mean, you're obviously not going to, try to teach your daughters to be masculine in a traditional sense, but I would guess that you're going to try to teach them that self-responsibility and, at the end of the day, being their own advocate, making sure they don't get taken advantage of and can kind of stand on their own two feet within reason. How do you then take that idea and convey it to young girls?
Yeah. I mean, I think, you raise an interesting point. It's important for all of us, I think, to be smart and to know things and to make a wide variety of things our business, to not just say, because I'm a girl, I don't need to know about this or that. And I think as a guy, I started doing my own laundry when I was 8. I've been cooking since I was little. So it's not like I look at things and say, well, I'm not going to touch that because I'm a guy and that's a girl's job. I don't look at things that way. Mm-hmm. But for my daughters, yeah, I want them to know things. I want them to be independent. My wife kind of jokes all the time. She's, cause she'll say, sometimes I'm being a little bit soft. She'll say, geez, it's a good thing, we didn't have boys, because, if a boy cries, it would just leave him, let him cry.
Sure. Don't you find it a little tricky being, a hulking 300-pound guy when you have to raise your voice a little bit or get stern a little bit? It's, you have to almost be overly sensitive, at least I do, to make sure that I'm not dropping my trainer voice and, hey, what are you doing?
Yeah, it's a fine line.
How old are your girls now?
The older one is 6, and we just had one recently. She's 4 months.
Okay, and congratulations on that. So I'm sure you're maybe getting a night of sleep here and there every once in a while. No wonder you're going to Dubai next week, right?
Well, to be totally fair, it's really my wife. She takes care of it. If the baby gets up in the middle of the night, she does it. She says, yeah. Listen, you know, you've got to be up at 5 a.m. I don't have to be up at 5 a.m. Just you go sleep and I'll take care of this.
Nikki and I had something very similar when we had our daughter. I'm assuming that's something that you and your wife came to. You talked it out. You agreed to basically saying, here's our division of labor. You know, I'm going to be out yes. and be the earner and you're going to be the one that's, you know, helping when I can't be there in the middle of the night. You got to step in and help me out. Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, everybody's got a job to do, right? Sure. And everything doesn't always have to be 50-50. You know, there's going to be times where, you know, I do this and you do that. And it might seem like you're doing more or it might seem like I'm doing more. And it just, look, I mean, that's just how it is in any relationship. And, you know, you're not sitting there tallying up or keeping track. Right. You're doing what's best, you know, you see is best for you to do at that moment.
Absolutely. So I'm really interested in basically the direction that our country, you know, America has taken in the 20th century and where it seems to be going, you know, from here. A lot of really crazy stuff has happened in the last couple hundred years. And I think people, you know, can easily forget historical context, whether you're looking at equal rights for women or, you know, really pushing for equal rights for all ethnicities. And of course, you know, many people will scoff at that and say there's still huge disparities and inequalities and all that. But either way, the point remains, you know, 500 years ago, that idea was unheard of, you know, right. 1,000 years ago, completely unheard of. And in that sense, you know, our civilization has really moved in a pretty unique direction pretty rapidly in the last 100, 150 years. Do you think that some of that has led to a certain egalitarianism as an ideal, meaning the idea that we are all equal, which obviously, you know, in America, we embrace that. We all had equality of opportunity, so to speak. Do you think that's then being kind of manipulated around so that now instead of equality of opportunity, you kind of have equality of end state, so to speak, meaning everyone right. is entitled, right. everyone is allowed to, you know, be a pro or everybody's allowed to be a winner, right. whether they actually, you know, went through the process of earning it or not.
Right. I mean, I think there's definitely such thing as overcompensation, you know, where you have a certain ideal and you become so, you know, obsessed with it and, you know, say, well, this is such a good thing. And you try to implement it, push for it. And sometimes I think maybe you even end up achieving the opposite. You know, not that I want to get into politics or anything like that, but,
throw it out there, man. Right now, the whole political arena is such a bizarro shit show that I don't think you can possibly have a wrong opinion on anything.
It's crazy. Surreal. You know, it's crazy. I just want to preface it by saying I think it's crazy everywhere. You know, look, extremes are always crazy. You know, and if we're looking at the political spectrum and we're talking about the right and the left and, you know, at either polar ends of both of them, it's equally as fucking wacky. you know, you have one side that just wants just like you said, almost an equal end state for everyone. Whether it's fair or not, whether it comes at the cost, you know, no matter what the cost is. And then you have the other side, at the complete, you know, opposite end, you know, that's just, I don't know.
Putting you on the spot. Well, let me ask you this, if you're willing, like I personally, I'm not very political. If anything, I very much lead towards a libertarian standpoint.
Yeah. Right.
Do you actually go out there and vote? Are you a political person or is it just not really your cup of tea?
No, I do vote and, you know, growing up, I would hear my father speak a lot, and as I've gotten older, I feel like I see a lot of it make sense and become true. I would say, you know, naturally, you know, if I had to try to describe myself, I guess I would say, you know, I would lean more toward a conservative, you know, viewpoint. You know, it's tough because these terms, conservative, liberal, I think they've changed so much. I mean,
not only that, but it sounds like you almost have to be semi-apologetic when you just put it out there.
Yeah.
You know, because it's gonna piss people off. Yeah.
Well, yeah. And I think what's interesting is that someone who would identify as a liberal, say 30 years ago, you could go back and listen to Bill Clinton speak in the 90s and say, Jesus, he sounds like a modern day conservative.
Sure.
So
So in other words, do you think there's been an overall push towards the left in the last, you know, 20, 30 years?
In society overall, I would say, yeah. And I do think that there is, you know, and does everything go back to money? Yeah, of course. I think that there's certainly a global agenda. And I think that, you know, if you live in a developed nation, you live in the United States, you live in Great Britain, Germany, Australia, people, there's an interesting phenomenon, right? It started with Brexit. Then Trump got elected. You see in Austria, this young conservative, youngest politician in their history was elected to their highest political office. Germany right now, there's, you know, from what I understand, and I don't claim to understand it perfectly, but it seems like, you know, Angela Merkel's, you know, reign may be in jeopardy, and that there's kind of a rising conservative viewpoint. I think that for a lot of developed nations, going back 30 or so years ago, they were promised this idea that by opening up trade, you know, that goods would be available cheaper to people, that it would benefit everyone. They were going to have all this cheap stuff, and the cost of living was going to be so much less.
Right.
And to some degree, that's true, but it's come at the cost of jobs. You know, and for main, you know, industrial manufacturing giants like the United States really still is, but was once to a much greater degree.
Sure.
How do people, you see this shift of people who were, you know, surviving on manufacturing jobs, et cetera. And these were decent paying jobs. Now the advent of these Walmart, Starbucks types of jobs, in the reality is most people aren't, there's most of the people that go to college probably shouldn't be going to college because they're not going for anything that's so highly specialized that it requires this higher education.
Right.
And I think there needs, and it's when you look at what it costs to what they're getting back, it just makes no economic sense at all. And there needs to be jobs just for common people because not everybody's going to be a lawyer, a doctor, a, you know, brain surgeon. And it just, it doesn't, these jobs don't really exist. And I just think that people in developed nations have seen globalism. They're starting to see it as not what it was sold to them as. And I think you start to see kind of this recoil, this pushback toward the right.
Yeah. No, I definitely
think a lot of them feel like they're seeing their country being given away.
Right.
They're seeing the jobs given away. You look at immigration situations in a lot of these countries, and just for the record, look, I'm all for immigration. Like, as you know, as many people point out, we are a nation of immigrants, but we don't want people's, or at least I wouldn't want future, you know, citizens of this country, their first introduction to this country being that they have broken the law by coming here illegally. I mean, we should be accepting people who, you know, are willing to abide by the laws. I mean, that's really kind of one of the most fundamental concepts. And it's crazy to me that so many people seem to just lost sight of it.
Back to the idea that globalism is going to benefit everybody living in these developed nations. Do you think the issue is primarily that they're not having the jobs that they need, or, you know, is it possibly also, you know, you could really almost tie it to like Karl Marx and the idea that people are just living lives that aren't fulfilling, I guess, meaning, you know, if you have that Walmart job, if you have that Starbucks job, there isn't much personal artistry or creativity. I mean, you're really just kind of, you're a button pusher. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I don't know how much more fulfilling it is working in a factory or on an assembly line. But I think that, you know, globalism has benefited a lot more poorer countries. I mean, look, Nike, right? Okay. If Nike makes their sneakers in Malaysia, does that benefit people buying sneakers more, or does that benefit people who now there's now a factory in Malaysia? And I'm posing this, you know, I don't know the answer.
Right.
I think if anything, it's benefited shareholders the most. I mean, it's about increasing profits. I mean, people say, well, if they weren't producing sneakers in Malaysia, Nikes would be $500. No, they wouldn't, because people wouldn't spend that. There wouldn't be as much profit for the shareholders. I mean, if they needed to keep things the same price.
Sure. Well, I think you could take it even a little bit further and say, how many people really need all these Nikes in Malaysia? Meaning, like, to a certain degree, haven't we been sold on the idea that we need a whole bunch of shit that maybe we don't really need? Like, and again, yeah. I don't know your personal views on that, but at least from a consumerist standpoint, like, our entire lives now is dedicated towards collecting this plastic crap. And
yeah, I mean, you're talking to a guy, I don't really don't give a shit. I mean, I walk around in basically a pair of slippers.
Right.
I really don't give a shit. as I've gotten older, I realize what I need or don't need. I mean, I drive a 15-year-old car.
Yeah.
By choice. That's what I it happens to be what I prefer. Yeah, there's not a lot I need, but I just don't think it's been what it's turned out to be, what it's been cracked up to be. I think that a lot of people are working. If you compare where we were at as a society, say 50 years ago, people were working a lot harder. Both husband and wife are working, and not by choice. It's because it has to be that way.
Right.
And I don't know.
Would you say with less satisfaction overall?
Like, I mean, I know I wasn't alive 50 years ago, but this is just my impression.
Yeah.
And this is what I hear from people who were around 50 years ago.
Sure.
A lot of them, you know, say, well, there's a lot more shit today, meaning
right.
There's a lot of stuff. Wow. You've got an iPhone, you know, wow, it does this, it does that. But a lot of kind of fundamental things just aren't there. I mean, look, I do remember the 80s. I grew up in the 80s, and it's not just because I was a kid at the time. The 80s were more fun. I mean, people were more relaxed. Now everybody is nasty. I mean, people want to kill each other.
Yeah. It's funny. My daughter's 8 years old, and I make her go back and watch movies from the 80s. And, you know, just that vibe of like, hey, let's go to a ski resort and I'll have a good time listening to, you know, hard rock and poofy hair. And no, I think you're absolutely right. And
look at this. You know, look, consider this, right? Look at, you remember the, you know, the 5.0 Mustangs and the Trans Ams and the IROC Z Camaros, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Those cars in the late 80s, early 90s were $18,000 to $20,000.
Okay.
And if you had one of those cars, it was actually cool. It was fun, right?
Like, right.
That was, you were somebody. It was a fun time. Wow, cool car. You could spend $100,000 today on a car. Nobody gives a shit. It's not fun. It's not unique. Nobody's having a good time. They turn their nose up and go, oh, well, it's not an AMG or whatever. It's miserable. It's a miserable time we're living in.
And that's what I was going to say. Like, it almost seems insofar as there are quote unquote good times nowadays, it's just status. It's the ability to. Yeah. Well, and again, you know, what I was going to talk about a little bit earlier is the idea of title worship. And now to tie this a little bit to bodybuilding, I think that's what we're seeing in bodybuilding is, you know, was always sold to you the idea that, you know, turning pro is the end game. And then if you're really going to go that much further, winning the Olympia or standing on the Olympia stage and then winning the Olympia is the end game. And they
as,
have
as a result, you've got a bunch of people who want to compete. They don't even like working out.
Hmm.
They hate training.
Right. Well, they
want somebody.
I think it's interesting, like, if we're looking at this in the 20th century, in my opinion, the purpose of technology is to make life a little bit easier in a sense. It makes it easier to achieve a goal or to get to a certain end state, you know, whatever the case might be, so that, you know, Evan Santopani doesn't have to personally learn how to build his house and he doesn't have to personally learn how to build his car from scratch. You can kind of stand on the shoulders of those who came before you and accelerate that process, right? And that's kind of what the march towards technology and civilization has been. And with that, you know, you shorten the process a little bit from the work you invest into something and the thing that you're trying to achieve, right?
Right.
And it almost feels like, you know, we've hit this point since the advent of the internet specifically. Everyone wants to sit there and say, oh, every generation bitches about the current generation and looks back at their generation like it was great. And they want to, you know, kind of imply that we're being relativistic right now. That
I want to be careful to not do that because it's easy to fall into that.
Well, and I don't think it's necessarily true. Meaning, if you actually look at the rate of acceleration in our country of ideas compared to 100 years ago, 500 years ago, and 1,000 years ago, you know, everyone talks about each generation bitched about the previous generation. Yeah, but you're only looking back a couple generations when you say that. You're not really looking at, you know, human history or Western civilization or anything. You know, technology and information has accelerated to such a rate now that like, I have the feeling, you know, obviously if I need to figure something out on the internet, I ask my 8-year-old daughter. I have the feeling in 10 years, like, 15-year-olds won't be able to figure out the internet because the 8-year-olds are going to be bypassing them, and it's just, you know, sped up that fast. So the question is, you know, has that destroying of process, so to speak, the yes. having to invest effort, does that go hand in hand with kind of where we've gone as a society with technology and consumerism?
Yeah, I mean, look, yes, to answer your question, yes, because nobody nobody puts their hands on anything anymore, right? I mean, the window motor broke in my wife's Jeep last year, right?
Sure.
What was cool is I was actually able to look up on YouTube. I watched somebody replace it. So I went down to the auto parts store. I got the motor. It took me a couple hours, and I put it in. But so yes, that's helpful. But I'm not afraid to put my hands on it.
Right.
A problem is a lot of people don't want to actually put their hands on anything, and everything has become disposable. And the people would sooner just throw away a car. Look, just probably 3 months ago, right? I drove out to Cleveland. I'm a big fan of third generation Pathfinders QX4s, right? I've owned like three of them at this point. They go forever, very few issues. Mechanically, they're great, awesome in the snow, whatever. But they're very hard to find, that they're not rotted out, with decent miles, et cetera, et cetera. So make a long story short, I mean, I drove 9 hours each way to Cleveland to pick one up, drive it back. And, you know, if you tell people, well, yeah, I blew 24 hours, you know, driving 9 hours in each direction to go pick up a 20-year-old car, whatever, people are going to go, what the fuck do you want that for? They can't understand. You know, they look at you like you've got 10 heads, because people would sooner just throw that away. Because it's not shiny. Anything that's new and it's shiny, it's great.
Right.
But if somebody's exhaust system was making noise, they'd be like, I got to get rid of this car. Meanwhile, you go underneath and it needs 10 minutes of labor.
Right.
And there's all this fear of, like, you know, people don't even, they're afraid to buy used cars. They won't even buy a used car unless it's through a dealership and they can get a warranty on it because they're so afraid of it. And I guess this is the point, is ignorance, right? It's terrifying. You're terrified of what you don't know. And that's bad. Like, we need to be able to dive into things and put our hands on things and say, oh, fuck it, I'll figure it out, or I'll fix it myself, or, you know, whatever. But I'm not going to just throw it away because it's broken. And that's kind of what we do now as a society. And I guess the question becomes, is, do we do that to people?
that's a great topic.
Relationships. I mean, I don't know. I've been with my wife now 12 years.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Most relationships don't last like that. I mean, look, it's so easy now when things don't go right, or you see the slightest little, you know, something, you see something in someone that's disagreeable or right. whatever, and you say, ah, fuck them, you know, and whatever. I don't think things were that way so much in the past. There was a greater willingness amongst people to cooperate with themselves, which is ironic because we're supposed to be living in the age of tolerance.
Well, but it's funny that you mentioned that, because, you know, I was listening to one of the Joe Rogan podcasts, and the, you know, the band Tool, the singer from Tool, Maynard James Keenan, was on, and he was talking about, you know, specifically these days with people driving around and playing on their cell phones, which, you know, everyone complains about, but he made a really good point. He said, you know, for me, at least when I drive, I have this subconscious, you know, state that is there at all times, which is stay the fuck out of people's way. Right. You know, this is a shared roadway. And I need to not only be concerned with where I'm going, but be concerned with kind of the bigger picture. And it seems like we've really gotten to this insane narcissistic stage where people just walk straight ahead without looking, you know, and it's your job to get out of the way.
It's a great point. Yeah, no, it's a great point. And things, it's weird. It's this weird phenomenon where we're supposed to be, you know, so much, you know, progressive, and we're tolerant, et cetera.
Right.
but we walk on eggshells, you know, like in the movie Gran Torino, right? You remember that? You saw that movie, Clint Eastwood?
I actually have not seen it, but I'm familiar with it.
So, well, there's a point in which, you know, Clint Eastwood walks into the bar, but he's with the kid next door who happens to be an Asian kid, and he's taking him around and he's, you know, trying to help him out. But he goes into a barber shop, and him and the barber start giving themselves each other a hard time. And he's calling the barber a Polak, and the barber's calling him, I don't know, he's calling him a Mick or, you know, whatever. It's just, it's, I guess what I'm, and then I'm not saying people should go around and call each other, you know, ethnic slurs, but right. What I'm saying is that there are, like, if somebody jokes about something Italian, or they do, you know, kind of this gangster accent, this, which, you know, which is stupid, right? This Guido, Long Island, I want to be a gangster, whatever, and, you know, brajol and meatballs. Yeah, it's stupid to me, but it's not offensive to me.
Right.
I mean,
well, yeah, but that's because it's cool to be Italian, you know. No, I understand.
All, I get what I'm saying is we all have things, right, that are part of our culture or our ethnicities. And it doesn't do any of us any good to pretend like they don't exist or like we can't joke about them. All it does is just make things so tense. And I think if you go back 20 years ago, that wasn't so much there. And I think as a result, people got along better.
Did you? Well, Evan, how old are you? Remind me really quick.
I'm 35.
So you're 3 years younger than me, and Scott's right around the same age, 40, I believe.
Yep.
Like, I personally, I remember being in high school when, like, the political correctness movement really started to hit. And I just remember, even then, looking around saying, what the fuck is going on? Like, we're not just doing this to, like, be polite or be morally righteous by treating people even. We're basically kind of reinventing reality. We're, you know, just a super safeguard any potential slight at people's feelings. And I guess the point is, do you feel that we have conflated words and actions these days? The point where, like, words almost, you know, back in the day, like, hurting somebody meant striking them, like causing physical violence to somebody. Right. But this country was great because we had the freedom of speech, which meant you could be as vile as you wanted to fucking be. And I know nowadays that's seen as a terrible, terrible thing, but it's also what allowed for this exchange of ideas that had never been seen in history before, that allowed us to earn this freedom and equality that we had never seen.
Consider this. Look at the recent presidential election, which I'm going to admit, there were really two pretty rotten choices.
Absolutely.
All right. Not good choices. It's sad that was the best that our country could produce. Or it's not the best they could produce, but it's the best that could make it there. So anyways, you've got Donald Trump, you've got Hillary Clinton. How many people were going to vote for Hillary Clinton simply because she was a woman?
Right.
And that in and of itself was progressive.
Right.
Now, I don't know about you, but if I said, well, I'm going to vote for Donald Trump because he's a guy, people go, well, you're a terrible, disgusting person.
Sure.
I didn't, you know, if I happened to actually like Hillary Clinton, I would vote for her. I liked Ben Carson. He's black. But it wasn't like I'm sitting there picking my candidate because of their gender, because of their race.
Right.
I mean, that's fucking crazy.
Yeah, you're doing it based on their ideas that they uphold.
Yeah, with the content of, you know, what I think is the content of their character or their sincerity or lack thereof or whatever. But it's just crazy to me that we're living in a time where gender, race, et cetera, they're not supposed to be that important, which I'm going to tell you right now, if I'm going to pick the leader of our country, those things are not important to me.
Right.
Well,
they're not supposed to be important unless your gender or your ethnicity or even your physical state, let's say you're fat, mm-hmm. was traditionally considered less powerful. Meaning we've kind of taken the groups that have not been the powerful groups, whatever you want to call that, and enshrined them to the point, you know, one thing that I found really interesting with your interview with Lee Marco is how it's completely okay to fit shame. But if you went up and, you know, fat shame somebody, or no, I'm sorry, you were talking about it with men and women, you know, how like a commercial can mock somebody for being male. But if you were to do that towards a female, it would be seen as completely misogynistic and inappropriate. I mean,
there's your overcompensation. And by trying to achieve one thing, do you achieve the exact opposite?
Yeah. No, I agree, and I think it's a great point.
I mean, look, we can all agree that racism or sexism, these are not desirable things. These are things that we don't want as part of our society. But we either shun them or we condone them, but we don't pick and choose.
Right.
You know, and that's what I see being done. It's picking and choosing, and it's not right.
Well, and to a point now where it's really starting to, you know, hurt certain people, meaning like if you go out there and you say, hey, I'm a strong individual that's independent and I don't need the help of my entire community to get where I want to get. It's almost seen as a bad thing that, you know, you're not somehow dependent. You're not somehow reliant. You're not weaker than you are.
Which I don't know. I mean, look, call me crazy. Now, I don't see myself as a conspiracy theorist, but the only way I could possibly make sense of it is that there has to be a reason why it's been made undesirable to be someone who stands on your own two feet, someone who is strong, et cetera, industrious, whatever. And you look at what is going on in politics and the government, you almost feel like they want people to be reliant.
Yeah, no, I think that's pretty, I think that's uncontroversial personally. I'm sure most people find that controversial, but like good example, I mean, I always refer back to ancient Rome, and here you had this place that was just doing something that had never been done historically in terms of growth and, you know, pushing their culture and civilization and trying to incorporate other civilizations, so on and so forth. And it was interesting when you watch the political arena there, how it originally went from being more of a republic, and then in time, certain people wanted power. So what did they do? They distracted the masses with gladiatorial battles, you know, violence, mm-hmm. drama, and free bread, you know? Mm-hmm. And it shocks me that people nowadays don't see the same exact damn thing as being done to you.
Like, I mean, they're trying to pacify you. I mean, if you consider what people would do for a free T-shirt, I mean, you know, you see what they're willing to do in their daily lives and the power and independence and the autonomy that they're willing to relinquish for, you know, for very, very little in exchange. You know, I mean, how many people would give up their hopes and dreams, which are a gamble, you know, there's nothing for certain,
right,
in exchange for something that is way, way, way less, but is certain.
Yeah.
And that's what it is. And it's like, okay, they've got you.
I agree. So let me ask you this. Do you think this next generation is going to have a functional concept of pride? At least, like, you know, I would assume you and I do, or the previous generation did. You know, do you see with the younger kids coming up that are kind of getting interested in the sport or whatever, whoever you interact with, that's almost a lost concept these days?
I don't want to pick on the younger generation because it's easy to do. Right. And look, I'm 35. When I was 18 or 20, I wasn't, you know what I mean?
You've grown, you've matured. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. The only okay. I took my car the other day, right? I trained a client and I'm leaving and I see in like a large shopping plaza parking lot, there's a car wash set up. It's like a fundraiser car wash.
Okay.
And I figure, oh, you know, they're holding, it's kids, high school kids, they're holding signs. And I figure, oh, well, fuck it. You know, I could use a car wash and why not, you know, give the money to, you know, the kids. They're trying to do something. Right. So, okay. So I pull in. And I soon realized these kids never washed a car before.
There was, God.
There's four or five of them, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, they're kind of, you know, like everybody knows, you wash a car, you start at the roof, you go down, you wash the wheels last. Okay, but there's five of them. So you would figure, okay, one's going to do this part, one's going to do, they didn't have any clue what they're doing. They're not even looking at the car while they're washing it, right? They're off in la-la land.
Right.
I said to the guy who was kind of like the chaperone, I said, what's wrong with them? And he looked at me, he said, well, what do you mean? I go, well, have they ever washed a car before? And then I, you know what I realized? He probably never washed a car before.
Right.
So I felt like I was in the Twilight Zone. So I went over and I said, guys, watch. I took this the mitt out of the bucket.
I got to say, Evan, by the way, real quick, this is why everybody loves you, because you actually went over and you're just pro IFBB pro bodybuilder. He's like, I'm going to teach you, son, how to wash a car right here.
Right? I mean, look, I'm not going to just complain about it. Look, but if this were me when I was younger, my father would have said, jackass, get out of the way, watch. So I went over, I showed him, I go, look, you guys are, this was early, okay, maybe I was one of the first ones they had. I said, you guys can't do this to people for the rest of the day. You're charging money,
right?
You can't charge people for a pizza and not give them a pizza. You can't charge people for a washed car and you're not washing the effing car. Right. So I showed them, you know, they probably thought I was a lunatic, but somebody needed to show them, or somebody needed to say something. Jesus.
Sure. Well, in that sense, you know, I think we've kind of monetized pride or monetized self-esteem. You know, we've convinced ourselves that you can give people pride and self-esteem by giving them a fake title. So as long as these kids are out there believing they're doing something for a good cause, they are entitled, so to speak, to call themselves, you know, experts at this and don't have to actually shoulder responsibility for learning what they're doing.
Yeah. I mean, look, they probably could have washed 50 cars that day and nobody would have said anything.
Sure.
And that's not helping anybody, is the bottom line. Yeah, so you could be polite, whatever, but that not helping those kids. So pride, yeah, I mean, look, but you need to know you're not doing a good job to know you want to do a better job so that you could be proud of it.
Right.
Right? So, well, I don't know.
And it makes me almost... So then if you tie that, you know, to bodybuilding, since this is presumably all about bodybuilding, and so is your career... Let me ask you, do you think, I mean, there's never been money in this, you know, that's not the people that started lifting and then started competing never did it with the intention of, you know, making a run and becoming wealthy from it. In my opinion, you know, it was done at most as a stepping stone to something else. If you wanted to be ambitious, like, you know, Arnold did and so on and so forth. But for the most part, it was just the personal pride of saying, I want to be this guy and have this discipline and have this grind and this work ethic. Do you see that as a major contributing factor to why we're seeing numbers down, you know, at the local level, with the entry level in bodybuilding?
Well, I think that social media has made it so. I mean, look, before, you know, look, even going back, geez, I've only been competing since 2005, so, you know, 12, almost 13 years. Things have changed so much. I mean, you used to have to get on stage to kind of tie it all together. I mean, you could train in the gym all you want, but you're not actually a true bodybuilder. I don't want to say that, but you know, you need to actually get on stage. If you're going to really test yourself and know what you're made of, sure, and see the finished product, you got to go on stage.
Well, it's the difference between auditing a college course and finishing with a degree, meaning like you're putting in the work either way, but one shows a commitment to going the distance.
Right. And now, you know, with so many people becoming, you know, I guess the term is Insta famous. Maybe people don't feel quite as compelled to compete, or if they do compete, and this is an interesting thing. I mean, look, it's great. I think that the NPC and the IFBB have, you know, they've broadened their horizon and they've probably got more people competing now than ever. The only thing that kind of sucks is you see bodybuilding, I think, taking a little bit of a hit. At least that's just my impression. Because, I mean, look, I did my first show. I competed at 225 on the dot, and I was hard as nails. If men's physique was around at that time, I probably would have opted for men's physique because I wouldn't have thought I was big enough to bodybuild. Nobody thinks they're good enough to bodybuild. And I think what men's physique is, or even, you know, sometimes classic physique, it's a way for people to compete without, either because they don't think they're good enough or they don't want to wait until they are good enough. And that sucks because, look, if you want to bodybuild, then you should bodybuild. If it takes you 10 years, it takes you 10 years. If you want to do men's physique or classic physique, awesome. I think it's great. I don't have any problem with it whatsoever. I just don't like it when people they cop out and they do that because they don't think they're good enough to bodybuild, or they don't want to take the time, et cetera.
Well, I think in addition to that, you know, like me personally, I don't think I would have ever opted to do men's physique, even if it was available when I started, in part just it wasn't conducive to my frame and whatnot. But you said something interesting that, you know, when you're a bodybuilder, you never think you're good enough. And you can, you know, construe that as emotional neuroticism, if you will, as a really negative thing. Or you can view it as, you know, bodybuilding is interesting because it's infinitely open-ended, meaning like no matter how good you are, someone can be out there pushing to be better by, you know, being more consistent.
What person in their craft, if you make pizzas for a living, do you ever make the perfect pizza?
No.
No, you die trying to make the perfect pizza. Right. I don't think anyone who's really good at what they do ever arrives fully.
If you're looking at like artistry, well, it's funny. There's a movie you should check out. I think it's called Nero's Sushi. This 80-something-year-old Japanese man who spent 70 years learning the art of sushi and runs this little place in Japan and never misses a day when he's sick or anything like that. But it speaks to exactly what you're talking about, this relentless pursuit of excellence, you know?
Yeah, I mean, you aim for something. Yeah, you aim for perfection knowing that you're never going to actually reach it.
Well, and isn't that, at least for me, but I'm assuming for you too, wasn't that kind of the sex appeal of bodybuilding? Meaning like, no matter how good you got, you knew you could wake up the next day and it was exciting because there was more to chase. There was something greater to chase, something bigger and better to pursue.
Yeah, that so long as you have passion for it, you will never be tired of it because there's always something to do.
Right. Well, but I think it's interesting, even in the, you know, I've only been competing for 7-8 years and I've been bodybuilding for 15. Even in that time, I think we've really seen a shift in the mindset where, you know, the end game isn't to have this physique, but the end game is to step on the Olympia stage, you know, almost like that's been monetized, you know, by the IFBB, because they knew that's what everyone that was into bodybuilding really saw as the end goal. So now they've taken it and kind of repackaged and sold it. What's the fastest route to getting there?
It's just weird. It's not the way I think. Like, people will ask me, are you going to do the Olympia again? And I was like, I don't know. Like, who cares? Like,
right.
Who gives a shit? I mean, look, right now, you know, I'm still trying to get back 100% from the injury, whatever. Look, I'm going to get back on stage. It depends on how I do. If I, you know, whatever, and then I do another show. If I end up on the Olympia stage, great. But it was the same outlook I had on turning pro. It wasn't. Would it be very cool? Yeah, of course.
Right.
But it's not what drove me every day. I got out of bed to, you know, to be better and to go to the gym, and I looked forward to the gym. And, you know, could I tack on a couple more reps with the same weight that I did last week? And that's what you live for. Like, if you're a bodybuilder, that's what you live for. And right. You know, that feeling when you're in the gym, that's what it's about. And look, those other things, those, you know, the show placings or getting a pro card or getting to the Olympia, that's all a positive side effect. But I try to discourage people from focusing too much on that.
Right. Well, again, it comes back to the idea of process. Like, you love the actual process, the day-to-day, you know, the grind, because that's where you're going to spend 98% of your time, you know. And we've kind of been trained these days to say the process is stupid. Let's shorten the process as much as you can. You know, even when they started talking last year about getting classic physique at the Olympia, you know, it was released that you could enter classic and stand on the Olympia stage all in 1 year. And that was literally marketed as a good thing, you know, that you could do a, I know, which to me, it was like, well, why would you be proud of that? Like, why would you be proud of anything?
What's so great about that?
If you came to
me, doesn't that kind of diminish it? If you could have it that quickly, doesn't that kind of devalue it?
Well, I guess the point is, like, isn't part of what makes something special the effort that you pour into it? You know, you're making it special. If they came to me and said, hey, guess what? There's a new PhD program at Harvard and you can knock it out at 6 months in at home course study. I would assume it was a joke. Like, I wouldn't want that degree. I wouldn't brag about it. And if I did, I'd be an idiot, I think, because it can't be that serious if you can do it in that speed.
Well, yeah. I mean, the point at which college becomes free, I mean, you know, not to go back to that, but I mean, look, high school is currently free.
Right.
What does a high school diploma get you? The point of which college becomes free, it kind of becomes like an extended high school. It means nothing anymore. Well, and I guess, you know, to be able to step right on the Olympia stage, I mean, that kind of, you know, I don't know.
A lot less meaningful. No, well, and I think it comes
a little less prestigious.
Sure. Well, and same thing, like they're taking the idea, oh, this is the stage that Arnold stood on. And, you know, of course, Arnold was my idol. Well, yeah, but my goal isn't to just stand where he stood. My goal is to look how he looked.
Yeah, and, exactly.
You know, like that's really what mattered. That's why I did this, not because I could stand on the stage. But when you're looking at, you know, bodybuilding and shortening the process, if they keep doing that, it's interesting, you know, and not to dwell on a lot of really negative stuff. This week we saw Dallas's autopsy come out. And, you know, I personally think we've now seen in the last 20 years a lot of individuals that might have done much, much better if they were allowed to go slower. And I don't want to say they were forced to go fast, but the nature of our modern world, you know, you look at someone like Trey Brewer. Oh, he's the phenom and he's going to be the first sponsored athlete to BSN. And they basically pumped him up in a fashion where, like, if he couldn't meet expectation at that next show, we forgot him. You know, we didn't care. And we did the same thing to a certain degree. Like, you know, who's going to be the next Mr. Olympia? Justin Compton and Dallas. And the expectations are higher than they've ever been in terms of what you have to actually achieve physically. But right. The patience is at an all-time low.
Right. I think that bodybuilding is such a personal thing because it requires a lot of personal decisions to be made, you know, ones that may impact your health. You know, there's financial impact and it impacts relationships. The way in which people handle it, the speed at which they go, you know, what they're willing to do, what they're not willing to do. You know, it always kind of drove me nuts when I would, you know, whether it was reading the boards or whatever, and people kind of saying, well, this guy, he should be doing this or he should be doing that. Or, you know, why isn't he competing in this show? And it's like, yo, man, you know what? You go get a fucking pro card and you can compete all you want. You can, right. You know what I'm saying? You can run your career any way you'd like.
Sure.
But then, you know, look, people, then they bitch on the other hand when they say, well, the sport's toxic. The sport's, you know, people are pushing themselves too hard. Yeah, because there's fucking psychotic fans like you.
Right. Yeah, I agree.
You know, people feel obligated to live up to these standards and accelerate at this rate, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Or, you know, to be in X condition all year round or whatever. And if anyone out here is listening who's a potential, you know, or a future bodybuilder, aspiring bodybuilder, just believe me, take my advice and you would be smart to take things at your own rate. Very few people who are going to give you advice have any clue what they're talking about. Then beyond that, they don't have to live whatever decisions you make. They don't have to live with you. Do your family does make your own decisions. You know, really forget everything else.
I think that's some really sage advice for anybody that's listening and either thinking about getting involved with competing or trying to push it to a higher level. We're kind of sitting on a cusp right now where there's a lot of really weird stuff going on, not in only our society, but in our sport, you know, with the IFBB rift and all that, and remains to be seen what's going to come of it. I think that's a great time for everybody to step back, do a little personal inventory. What are they hoping to get out of this? Realistic expectations. And, you know, who are they going to be looking at the mirror at in 10 years, 15 years, 20 years down the road? So,
yeah.
All right, Evan, I know that you got a big day ahead of you before your trip to Dubai. I really appreciate your time today. If you could, why don't you give us a real quick update? I know you mentioned that you're still getting back to 100% with the quad injury. And yep. What you see coming up for you in 2018, anything that you can let fans in on?
Yeah. You know, like I said, I'm continuing to, you know, recover 100% from this injury. And right now, if I had to put a number on it, because, you know, people are always asking, probably 70% of the size is back in the leg. You know, functionally, believe it or not.
Can you do everything functionally that you were doing before?
Yes. I mean, like certain things, like for example, sissy squats or whatever, yeah. Very, very painful.
Okay.
There's still, you know, a decent amount of sharp pain in the knee. Yeah. doing certain things, and believe it or not, even still some swelling and there's some fluid in there.
Okay.
So, you know, you wouldn't think, like, geez, man, it's been 8 months, but it's, you know, it takes a while.
You gotta call Branch so he can teach you the right prayers to make sure that you heal up at a faster rate. And,
well,
sorry, I had to get Branch.
I mean, really, what Branch did was pretty crazy. I mean, he competed from the time he got injured. He was back on stage within 7 months and won the. I mean, that's having gone through this myself, and I say that's fucking wacky.
Right.
But in all fairness, you know, his injury when he competed that year was apparent. And for someone like, you know, Branch had always had really, really strong legs. So right. Even if a leg was a little down in size, he could get away with it. That's not the case with me. So my legs being body parts that needed to come up anyways, I can't afford to get on stage until they're, you know, at least where they were prior. So it's going to take a little more time. Aside from, you know, just constantly striving, you know, to be my best as a bodybuilder, you know, in the gym day to day. I'm, you know, looking forward to continuing my relationship with Universal, which has been such a strong and positive relationship for, geez, I started with them in 2006. It's been a long time. And we're working on a product together, which should be out in the next few months. It's actually a meal replacement.
Okay.
Actually, a great product. And
is it a bar or a powder or what?
No, it's a powder. Okay. It's all whole food based and it's 100% natural. The digestion of it is awesome. I stopped using powders back in 2009 because I couldn't take them anymore. Just they'd F my stomach up. And, but you know, it's a nice thing to be able to have in a diet, you know, just, you know, throw in a shake here or there, you know, for convenience, it tastes good. You know, usually they're fairly cost effective,
right?
But I just couldn't tolerate them. And I started playing around with a formula just several months back. And I said, geez, I can actually tolerate this. This is good. And I feel full when I use it. This could be really good. And ironically, Universal approached me. And they said, you know, we've got an idea. We like to work on this. What do you think? And I said, wow, that's funny because I've got something that I think would be awesome. So they, you know, they kind of made it a reality. And within the next few months, so it's. I'm not just saying it because it's mine. Anyone who knows me knows I don't promote anything unless I truly believe in it. Sure. Because look, I mean, people are going to try it eventually, and if it sucks, they're going to go, Evan, you're a fucking liar. Why'd you tell me that?
Well, and it sounds like the product is right in your wheelhouse. You know, both yourself and John Meadows coming out with more nutrition-based products. Given that that's kind of what you're known for, rather than just pushing the, you know, flashy, hyped up supplements. So it's definitely sounds like something that'll be pretty awesome.
Yeah. So there's that. And, you know, right now that's it, you know, continuing to focus on that relationship and, you know, continuing to focus on bodybuilding.
Do you think we'll see you on stage in 2018 or totally undecided as of right now?
Originally the plan was to do the New York Pro. Okay. But as you know, as I'm unfortunately finding out, it's going to be a little soon. So 2018 is 100% the goal. And I think it's very, very, very possible. But like I said, you know, I won't know for certain until I say, okay, you know, my legs are good and strong again. And I'm, you know, squatting five plates and
right.
the actual volume is there in, you know, in both my legs. So time will tell.
And if not, you get to go out in the yard and do lunges with your 4-month-old on your back. So, you know, win-win, right? All right, Evan. Well, I want to thank you so much again for your time. And for listeners, you know, I'm sure everyone can find you. But anyone that's looking to get a hold of you, what's the best way to get a hold of you?
By email, evan@centipani.com. That's pretty easy. Or, you know, you could just hit me up through a direct message on Instagram. My account was just my name, Evan Centipani, you know, no gap in between. And that's it.
Easy enough, man. Well, again, Evan, I thank you so much for your time. Hopefully you don't get too much hate mail from a bunch of feminist groups or anything like that for this. I certainly don't think you will.
Yeah, and- no, it, no. And look, hey, just to you know, recap, you know, I don't...
Man, you made your position pretty clear on here. I don't think anything you're saying is controversial. It's just, you know, we live in an era where things are getting a little nutty, and I think it would behoove people to stop and think through some of the crap that they're doing and saying. And, you know, it's a strange times that we live in, you know, and you're going to get people commenting on that. So,
yeah.
All right.
All right.
Well, so on that note, Evan, thank you very much for your time, and we'll be back in a minute with Beyond Driven Radio.
Thank you, guys. What is my name?
Team Warrior Within, founded by David and Nikki Johnston. More than 14 years experience as full-time trainers and coaches. Through their online coaching service, they can help anybody who has a passion to make progress. From everyday people just looking to lose weight, build muscle, trim up, to contest prep for beginners, all the way to working with top-level IFBB pros. 100% month-to-month rates, no contracts. Check out the website, teamwarriorwithin.com, and visit Facebook, Team Warrior Within. Hey guys, thank you for listening to Beyond Driven, part of the Advices Radio Network. And don't forget, we got a whole lot of other podcasts too. A lot of times we have 5 podcasts a week. That's a lot of information, a lot of content. It's all free to you. Seriously, the more you listen, the more you will learn. So be sure that you subscribe to Advices Radio at iTunes, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast app. Check us out at advicesradio.com and check out our social media for details on upcoming shows. Thank you. Your support means a lot, and we are happy to be giving back to the bodybuilding community.
Advices Radio Network.